Hi, I'm Magda Miśka-Jackowska, and this is my film music podcast, Score and the City. What a pleasure to share this interview with you on a day of the Polish premiere of Songs of Earth. This beautiful documentary, written and directed by Margaret Olin and executively produced by Wim Wenders and Liv Ullmann, has been called a majestic symphony for the big screen. It's a dialogue between a small family story and the big nature, between images and sounds, with a score that ties it all together. Meet Rebecca Karijord, a Norwegian composer and musician known for a documentary film Am Greta and a drama thriller All the Old Knives. A woman with a gift for telling stories, an artist who needs nature to make music. I would like to start from the beginning. What pushed Margaret Olin to make this movie was probably a simple question. Who am I? Where am I from? What would you say if I asked this question?
I'm from not very far from where the film actually takes place, but a little further up towards the polar circle, a little further north. I was born in a place just south of the polar circle called Sandnessjøen. And I grew up quite a lot of places in Norway, actually, until I was about nine. Then my mom and I situated closer to Oslo. I grew up in a family of female storytellers and with music very close, a lot of singing, a lot of fairy tales, a lot of folk tradition, and I found music very early on. I started playing violin when I was eight and piano a little later, and started writing my own songs when I was a teenager. So and film I started with when I was 12. I've been working with film in various roles since I was 12 years old. I'm a profound film lover. But music seems to be what I always come back to. That's my safe space. So yeah, and now I live south of Stockholm with my two daughters and my husband in the countryside, in the farm. And I have a studio, new built, that I just moved into, where I can see the ocean. So that's me.
I'm happy we can know you better thanks to this movie, Songs of Earth. When I asked these first questions, there was another one hidden about you as a female composer.
I think it's a very exciting time to be a female film composer, because finally the glass ceiling is broken. When I started out maybe 15 years ago doing small documentaries in Scandinavia, there was no one else to look to. And then Hildur won the Oscars and something happened. Now I have an agent in LA who only works with women and underrepresented minority queer composers, and he's fantastic, Arbel Bedak, who really works to lift minority composers. And I feel like quite often people contact me because they want a woman to write the music. And I think my life attitude is kind of that, even though I've definitely been in situations that has been uncomfortable with only men and me, where I had to really think wisely, how should I now take up space? How should I do this? How should I show my knowledge? But I really insisted on not becoming a victim in that role because of for my own sake, not because of how I appear to others, but I think because of where I come from. So I think I have a quite light view upon how it is to be a woman. I think there's so many advantages, and film music is a very cooperative work, and I think women are very skilled for cooperation and circular ways of working together.
I want to go back to what you said about your family and women who tell stories. Do you think that we do this in a different way than men do?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think it's hard to generalize, but if you think about the history of it, women has never started wars. There's no statues or gold medals for being a good mom. It's for conquering countries. And I think male histories has historically been more about power and money and conquering, and female histories has maybe been more about the inner world. And that's a superpower, you know, being in touch with the inner world and the inner stories. And as a composer, that is exactly what you're working with. It's being a film composer is a deeply empathetic profession. I use that every day in my work, that empathy, and I need to nourish it, keep in touch with it. Yeah.
And let's talk about documentary film, which gives a lot of joy to the composer, but at the same time, it is a huge challenge. In documentaries, music is able to say much more.
Well, I was kind of trained through documentaries, and I didn't realize that it's harder to write documentary music than fiction music quite often. There is way more music in documentaries quite often. And then it's this beautiful and challenging aspect of you can never be grander than the story, because the story is real. And music is such a manipulative, powerful tool. I mean, manipulative, again, in an empathetic way, and not in a mean way. But you have to really balance so you never make the audience sit and think, oh, this is just a film. While where you're in the fiction world, you can be more minimalistic, but more drastic in some way. So I think Songs of Earth is different because it's not really a traditional documentary. It's more like a fiction film. There's hardly any dialogue and there's massive musical moments. But it was a good school for me to really learn how to listen and think about dramaturgy, and I guess to find my place in the puzzle that is the intricate puzzle that is filmmaking.
You've worked with Margaret Olin before. I think it's easier and probably it's more fruitful when you know a director for a longer time, isn't it?
Yes, we worked together for 15 years, and I think I'm one of the first people she actually tells her ideas to. We usually have a workshop early on before anything is on film. So, and she's very, very interested in music and drawn to music and cares about the music in her films. So, and she leaves a lot of space for me, like so much trust and space. There is this beautiful, trustful space between us now after many collaborations. So it's a very valuable relationship for me, personally and professionally.
In Songs of Earth, you have a very important role, not only as a composer, but also as someone who tells the story. This wouldn't be possible without working with the sounds. Can you tell me more about this process?
Yes. So the initial idea that Margaret and I had with Songs of Earth was to make a documentary symphony for the big screen. So the music was always very important from the get-go, and very early on got this vision how I wanted to work with it. It was a clarity. There's been a clarity in this project all the way from the beginning when she talked about it. I was just like, okay, this is going to be special. So the sound team went up to the valley with hydrophones and contact microphones and went into the glaciers, into the river, through the seasons. And I got a library of sounds from the four seasons before I started composing. Then I used maybe a year to transcribe these sounds into orchestral sounds. So it would be like, okay, what would the glacier, which instrument in the orchestra could interpret the glacier? What would be the voice of the old spruce? How would the stones in the river that the hydrophones capture sound on a plucking viola section? And then I made these ground sketches, notations, and I didn't really know if it was going to work, but I was really excited. It was like a profound sonic research and an education almost too. And I'm a nerd with extended techniques, especially with strings. I love working with strings. So then I took in soloists and I tried stuff out, and they got to see the imagery and try to play these ideas, and we developed it even further. And then in the end, we orchestrated it for London Contemporary Orchestra and recorded it in Air Studio. And they're amazing with these kind of extended techniques. They work with some of the best film composers in the world, and they're very open and flexible in the moment too. So we could work with panning. I could say to the conductor, Hugh Brunt, what if this plucking starts there and we move over there? And what if we take it down two notches in dynamic there, but we let the double basses come up? So it was a very, very flexible, fluid process. Amazing. So fun. So much fun.
Do you remember your first thoughts about the score?
I think one of the initial thoughts or feelings that I had, intuition, was that the music should never take over. It should always stem from the nature sounds. There was a very clear hierarchy to me between the nature sounds. And then there are places where the music is allowed to grow and get really big and melodic and human made. You hear the players and you hear the orchestra, you hear the soloist interpretation of these amassed majestic views, but it never comes out of nothing. It always comes out of the sound, and all of a sudden it's there. So I think that was my wish with it, was to create something that grew out of a different kind of listening, if that makes sense. And I meditated actually for a month before I started writing, because I felt I came out of this big American film that was the opposite. It was so hectic and so much music in 5 weeks, very intense. And I was like, okay, I need to listen now in a different way. So I went back to all my transcriptions of the sounds, and I was just meditating for a long time and walking in nature here. But I think also, which is the case with Margaret's films a lot, that it taps into something where I am also in my own personal process. And I've worked a lot with climate-related projects the last years. I did the music for the film about Greta Thunberg. And I did a record called Complete Mountain Almanac with Bryce and Aaron Dessner, and lyrics by Jessica Dessner. And they are very related thematically to this film. So I was very touched. That's the feeling when if I think about how it was initially for me, I was really deeply touched, and it felt very important to find that voice of that valley. It's a very personal film for Margaret, but it's actually a really personal film for me too.
I would like to ask you about this beautiful moment of making music when it comes to life, which is working with orchestras, working with musicians.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a very solitary work to be a composer. You sit a lot alone. You deal a lot with people on distance. It's a lot of meetings and spreadsheets and budgets and frames and deadlines, but the work itself is very solitary. When I close the door and I go into here and I'm like, okay, what is it I'm going to tell? And I love that. But everything has its time. And the music can only go so far with me. So something that I'm very humble about happens in the meeting with the musicians, with their way of seeing the imagery or hearing my melodies. And I absolutely love that. That's when it starts to live. So I have some soloists that I come back to because I feel really safe with them and they feel safe with me. And then when it comes to recording orchestra, it is amazing and so such a like endorphin rush, but it's also very stressful because it costs a lot of money. And we were in Air Studio, and everything's very like, you know, how much it costs to be there. And the clock is ticking and you're like, okay, I got to get this on tape. And as a composer, you have to be so specific. And the director is often in the room when you do the orchestras. And this, maybe they haven't done orchestra so many times and it sounds different than the sketches. And you have to be like, it's going to be fine. We're going to mix it. It's not done, you know. So I find those situations wonderful, but also quite intense. Yeah.
You call this movie a love story. And indeed, it tells a story about the connection we have with the family, the connection you as a composer have with the director, and about the relationship that we have with nature.
It's a love story on many, many levels. I think the love story, that it's a love story from Margaret, the director, to her parents, naturally. And that I, of course, relate to. But for me, the deeper connection for me is the love story to nature. Because we're in a place right now with nature changing so rapidly and we barely understanding our role in this process, where we have to connect to, again, the empathetic side in ourselves and the feelings around it. I think that's why I really love this film, is that it reminds us that we are part of nature. And if we destroy nature, we destroy ourselves. And we're made out of the same stardust as every rock and every bird and every worm and every tree. And like Mary Oliver's poems about trees and the wild geese, she talks about that a lot. And I feel like Songs of Earth is that kind of poem too, a reminder that you are nature and you can't live without it. And there's so many climate change stories right now that are activist, or they're angry, or they're dystopic. And we need those too. We need everything. But this one is connecting to a place in us that I think it's easy to suppress. So I think that's why people get really touched by it, because it allows us to remember this deep love. It's more than love. It's like belonging. It's the womb where we come from. It's cellular, you know? It's on a cellular level.
There is a scene in Songs of Earth when a daughter says to her parents, "I cannot imagine that you will be gone one day, and I'm going to miss you terribly." And I think that the same thing we can say to the nature, to the mother nature.
And the difference, I guess, between losing parents and losing nature is that when we grow up, we have an autonomy that we developed over a grown-up life. So when the parents pass on, it's like Erling, her dad, is saying in the film, this is how the generations go. Yes, you will grieve, but you will also remember. And with nature, there isn't an autonomy. We're not autonomous from nature. So there's a counterpoint also in the film, that an undertone that comes out towards the darker second part of the film, I feel, winter. I love how undramatic it is. It's very understated. It's more like some sort of a subtext.
We have four seasons here, and music loves this form of four seasons, four chapters, four changes, four images. So did Vivaldi and Piazzolla.
I am a total sucker for frame. I love, and that's why I like being a film composer too, I think. But also in my own projects, I create frames. Even if no one is ordering music from me, I'm like, okay, I'm going to make my own record. What is the story? What are my limitations? Because I think I work better under that. And that was one of the first things that also came up with Songs of Earth. When Margaret said that there was going to be four seasons, I thought that was really inspiring. And I right away started to make a mood board on my wall in the studio with four seasons as headlines, and every thought that came, every sonic idea, every instrument idea. So that was a wonderful frame. And naturally we have big musical works that also has utilized this frame. So there is stuff to be inspired by, but I don't think I listened so much to other composers, and they didn't tempt with other music either in this film. So it was more like a reinvention of the seasons. Plus, the seasons up there are different from where they are, where Vivaldi wrote his four seasons. Like the winters are long in the north, and the summers are short.
What is the most inspiring thing around you that helps you to create music?
I read a lot. I think poetry really inspires me, like the rhythm of poems. I read a lot of poetry. I read a lot of novels, and I walk a lot. I'm out in nature a lot. I love being with animals. I ride. I'm a horseback rider. And I think all those rhythms and the presence in being with the animals and with my kids and nature really can be heard in my music somehow. But then, I mean, I'm really, really curious about stories and people and where they come from. And if I don't know, then I'm trying to make it up, kind of. And that, I think that's where that comes from, the storytelling background that I have too. So I guess storytelling would be an answer to it.
I have to share this with my students who often ask me how to become a successful composer. And when I say, okay, you can read more, they're very surprised. But that's true, because craft is not everything.
When you put it that way, I mean, I was trained as an actor first. I went to the Royal Academy of Acting. Then I studied music. And when I was acting in films for some years, and then music took over and I left the acting with a very light heart. I was done. But what I noticed that I took with me is this deep love for, you know, plays and manuscript and dramaturgy and the Greek mythology and Shakespeare and every film manuscript that I get on my table has something to do with that lineage of storytelling. I'm very thankful for that. For a long time, I was like, why did I study acting? Why did I spend 6 years or doing that? And why did I? And now I'm like, God, I'm so glad that I have that with me in my backpack.
My last question, what do you hear when you open the window?
Right now, it would be silence because it's snow everywhere. But if we wait 2 months or maybe even 1.5 months, I live in a bird sanctuary. So it would be a cacophony of geese. It would be like bird sounds everywhere outside my window. I can show you the view. Let's see. So this is my view from the studio. If you can see it. So down there is the ocean. It's all frozen now. And there's a bird sanctuary all the way. And if you go out there, that's towards the open ocean. So that would be the sound.
Hi, dear listeners of Score and the City. This is me, Rebecca Carriord. I'm so excited to be a guest here today. Thank you.